RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So now to the issue of the sale of sheep and beef farms to forestry for carbon farming. A couple of historic East Coast stations have sold recently, including Glen Innes Station. And to talk about this, coming on to RCR is Kerry Worsnop, who is a farmer and former Gisborne District Councillor, who's also a vocal rural advocate. Kerry, welcome to RCR. Nice to have you on.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
This is a big change, and it's starting to eat up lots of farmland, and it's not really for the benefit, is it, of our country, and just puts pine trees everywhere. I'm a city guy. Have I got that right?
Yeah, I think there's layers to the issues that come with our approach to net zero, which the primary thing that is driving afforestation is government policy, and the government policies that we had under the previous government and that we've still got under this government see the cheapest way to attain our commitments under the Paris Accord is essentially to let the market offset 100% of the emissions that they're obliged to pay for under our emissions trading scheme. And so what that means for many, many companies is that it is far more cost effective to buy land and plant trees and earn New Zealand units and surrender those than it is for them to change anything that they do. And for some companies, they actually, there actually aren't that many options for some operators in terms of, decarbonisation options. So, it's really just open slather. And it has been, to be honest, for a few years now. We saw a little bit of a pause in things when there was uncertainty around, the continuation of the previous government and a lot of uncertainty because the previous government started to try and understand these issues.
Made an attempt. Is that what you're saying? Did they?
They commissioned a really broad-based and quite deep review of the ETS and what it was actually doing in practice, which the incoming government killed. So,
It sounds like the lazy way to go, the easy way out, but it comes at a price. Surely you're going to tell me it comes at a price.
Yeah, it's going to come with a hell of a price, especially as time goes on. We're dealing with this probably in the most blunt and short-sighted way that you possibly could. I think it's not news for a lot of people to know that there's only ourselves and Kazakhstan that allow 100% offsets.
We're in great company.
But I mean, I don't know how, as a country, we're comfortable with that. I don't understand it. We are primarily a primary producing nation, and that does include wood products. But the driver behind a lot of this afforestation is actually not the economics of timber. And I mean, you see that by the swathe of mills that are, closed. Gisborne lost a mill fairly recently. We don't have a great track record of doing amazing things with our timber. We actually have a really great track record of driving timber businesses out of business.
Yeah, I see the logs on the wharf. I used to drive past just piles of logs on the wharf, and there's always been an argument that we should be value adding all that stuff here. So it's not about the wood. It's just about the credits. I get it. So back to 2021. From what we could make out, 0.6% of farmland, beef and sheep pasture, had been taken up by this kind of afforestation on what is described mostly as not highly productive farmland. Do we have any idea in 2024 what that figure is now?
I think probably not, because their figure was only the figures, to be honest, over the last few years have really only been produced by people outside of the government, because the government's not that interested in knowing how much of our communities we're subjecting to this. I think what's probably quite important to note is that people who are being more transparent than the previous government or the current government in terms of what this set and forget kind of approach means. You know, you've got the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment saying, look, hey, if you keep this hands off the wheel approach, we're going to end up with millions of hectares of trees that are of dubious economic value and essentially are simply buying us international kudos temporarily, because of course you only get a one-off benefit from planting the trees. You certainly, it's not a sustained gain, and of course we lose primary production in the meantime. All of that, you know, annual income that was previously derived from farmland, which, I mean, there's a lot of I guess unrest in rural communities about what is being defined as unproductive. Quite often the people that are defining it for us are not the people who have any connection to our communities.
How is that defined, Kerry? How is it defined?
I cannot tell you because there's a myriad of different definitions. And I think if you move region by region, there, I mean, there's an argument that, you know, you could say, well, you know, a lot of the South Island High Country is, you know, it's running minuscule numbers of stock per hectare. But then you go, well, actually, the country really values the scenic aspects of the High Country. They really value the open natural tussock lands. They really, you know?
Yeah. So it's part of our heritage. It's part of our inheritance as a nation.
100%. And so, you know, which bit of what we value do you want to give up? Do you want our farms that have a low environmental footprint to be substituted with pine trees and we just cram everything onto what's left? You know, I mean, I don't believe that that's going to improve our profile as a country in terms of an ecologically sustainable primary producer. So
surely, Kerry, anyone who pushes for that doesn't have heart for their country. It's unpatriotic, actually.
It's convenient. That's what it is.
You're selling us down the road, really.
So I spent the last 18 months doing research and you know, how you address complex policy. And this is a really deeply complex area, because energy, and when you're talking about carbon, you're basically talking about energy. It touches everything in everyone's lives. And the idea of addressing comprehensively something that is so interwoven with society and the economy and our social and economic lives, the idea of addressing that comprehensively is probably insurmountable in the minds of politicians. So even embarking on that journey just seems too big, too hard, too complex, too messy. So they'd much, much prefer to stick with a blunt instrument like the emissions trading scheme, which they can kind of say, oh, hey, that's going to do it for us. And if it happens to do things that the country doesn't like, well, actually, that's the, you know, it's once removed from the political decisions themselves. And I think you saw this with the last government. They repeatedly, as we saw, whole huge swathes of Wairoa and down Southern Hawke's Bay start to be, you know, planted to the extent that I visited a family a few months back now, and they were the only farm left on their road.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, while all this was happening, what we heard repeatedly from politicians was really that their hands were tied and they needed to wait for a review of the policy, and they were just perpetually waiting. And then what do you know? They didn't get in again. And so I think you're going to see the same thing with these guys, where they say, oh, look, you know, we'll do this and we'll do this and we'll do this and we'll fiddle around the edges. But actually, in the main, they want enough land to turn into trees that they kind of manage to get off the hook for not having substantively reduced our emissions. Because they promised to do that, but they don't really plan how to do it.
In the end, sorry to jump in, but in the end, who really cares? You know, we could easily do a Trump here and say, go stick your whatever. Well, you know, we've got a living to make here. We've got a heritage and history to go here. The science is flaky anyway, so we're not doing it. Goodbye. See you later. I mean,
you might do that, but our leading politicians don't tend to be of that ilk. And we do, I mean, there's there's enough in the fact that we are a trading nation that we do need to be quite mindful of how we're perceived on the international stage. What I think will be very helpful for New Zealand is to understand that our emissions profile is as large as it is because we have so much farming, but the way we're measuring farming emissions doesn't actually reflect the warming that we're adding to the environment. So right from the get-go, we've kind of hamstrung ourselves with an unrealistic expectation of what we can deliver feasibly. I mean, you see a lot of promises that end up this way. I mean, Air New Zealand is currently walking back its 2030 targets because it says, look, hey, just they're not realistic. The reason they're not realistic is because Air New Zealand's no longer offsetting with the great appetite that it was 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, because it's not good for their business.
It's not, because people see through it, right? They're like, actually, you know, there's no much point in solving one environmental problem with creating another one. And I think that's what we're doing here. This is what we're doing with carbon. We're solving a problem that is defined politically, and we're creating a material in the ground environmental and community problem.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just, I mean, we can do better than that. We don't need to be as blunt. We can actually, we can make better decisions than this. And I know, I mean, to be fair to the incoming government, they're planning on creating some limits around how much land can go into trees in any one year on certain classes of land. But I mean, I would point out that in Gisborne, the land that we cannot afford to have any more forestry on is the class of land that they're saying, well, actually, fill your boots, you can plant as much of that as you want, never mind the fact that your rivers are choked with slash. Mm-hmm.
Was the special forestry test abused?
Oh, God. It didn't need to be abused. It didn't need to be abused. It was designed that you could drive a truck through it. Yep. And I mean, I remember talking to people who were in the Overseas Investment Office, and I remember talking to a woman who she didn't have any clients at that time, but she'd acted for overseas interests as their legal counsel. And then that's what she said to me. She's like, they don't have to try. It's designed to funnel them through.
Yeah.
So, that was, I think, quite catastrophic for us because it sent an international message that anyone globally could come and dump their carbon problems here.
The reason I was sort of a bit, you know, heavy before saying, you know, tell him to go or shove it, is that I just remember having a chat with Barry Brill here about a month ago, and he pointed out that if you measure carbon on the western side, I think that's the prevailing wind side of New Zealand, and on the eastern side, there's a huge drop-off, and that's because we have a lot of, you know, biomass sequestration that's not counted at all. And just on that basis, you know, just on that basis alone, we can claim that we're lowering carbon. The other thing is, how come we're so pedantic about native species and preserving native flora, indigenous flora and fauna, yet we're prepared to turpentine soak vast areas of land in New Zealand with biology that's not even from here?
I think, I mean, valid question in terms of the way that we measure, where New Zealand's only interested, so politically, this is all political, right? It's not natural science directing what it is that we measure, it's politics directing what we measure, and international politics as well. You know, whatever the UN and these bipartisan agreements kind of tie us into, that's, you know, we come home and do our best to be the kind of, you know, front of the class on that. But if you were to purely look at New Zealand in terms of, you know, the actual landscape itself, then suddenly you're counting things that aren't anthropogenic, right? So anthropogenic is what people do.
Yep.
And then you've got obviously a whole bunch of stuff that people don't do. And of course, a third of New Zealand is in conservationist state. So there's a lot of New Zealand that people don't have much to do with. We're not, and I don't think I've ever really seen any work that has much interest in understanding the sum total of both those pictures put together. And I think that's probably feeding people's deep cynicism around the way the issues are conveyed to us. I think if there was more transparency around what does New Zealand look like as a, you know, as a country which only has 5 million people,
yep.
You know, we we're very, very high in terms of, you know, per capita emissions, but that's because we have hardly any capitas. So, you know, I think that, you know, people feel quite hard done by in that way of, you know, measuring us. So to a certain extent, some of the opposition to how we're trying to, you know, respond to these international agreements, et cetera, is, you know, we've sort of set ourselves up a little bit to basically make people very skeptical of our motives and definitely skeptical of the information that we produce. Because we cherry pick it. And I think probably everyone would quite like to know, actually, if you just counted everything, then what do we look like?
If we look good, we're doing our job and we can thumb our nose, because in the end, it just comes down to the reality, doesn't it? Not how it looks, mm-hmm. but what's really happening.
And I think you're seeing that in Europe a lot at the moment. We're faced with the cost of what countries have committed to. Consumers are suddenly having a bit of buyer's regret. And they're kind of going, well, we actually, I'm really struggling to live my life the way I hope to live my life. And a big part of that is because all of these things that we kind of voted for are very expensive. And I mean, it's human nature. You don't willingly take steps backwards. And of course, being less wealthy is quite a material step backwards. So, I mean, it's noteworthy that the most progressive places in the world in this sort of area also have the most unrest right now.
Yeah, good point. What is the impact on rural communities? Can you tell us? There's your area, but it'll be all over, won't it?
It's massive. So we've got two blocks that we run. One is west of Gisborne, and that is in a really strong, hearty farming community. And the other is up the east coast, where I'd go so far as to say that up that far, Waipiro Bay, farming is just about gone. If you stand on the top of the farm and you look around you, basically all of the spots of green are that used to be grassland are becoming dark green, pine trees. Yeah. And that's thousands of hectares. That's even just in the time that we've, over the last 3 or 4 years. I think that the difference is profound, because you lose that sense of being able to rely on one another. If things like the cyclones that occurred last year and cut off whole communities need to be able to rely on each other. And to do that, you need a sense of community. You need, at least a critical mass of services. You need to be able to sustain, you know, the local shops and the local service stations and the people that are going to look after you. And not have to travel 2 hours for that, or at least an hour.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard on the people of the East Coast that forestry's in a downturn at the moment. A lot of the logging crews have left, and there's not a lot to sustain the economy. We haven't actually worked out what are we going to do instead if we're not farming. And a lot of the Southern Hawke's Bay and inland Wairoa, etc., they're going to discover this in the next few years, where the people that are kind of have the option and can leave do leave, and the people that aren't rich enough to leave get stuck there, and they get stuck in a declining cycle of, you know, no work, no money, and very poor services. And I mean, that's something that Europe really, really tries to resist. It's a reason that they supply so many payments to their farmers under the Common Agricultural Policy. Thread of what they want to do is sustain people in rural communities. And that's just not a lens that New Zealand has at all. We take for granted that, that's not a job of the government, that, you know, if communities aren't sustained, well, too bad. But then we see the outcomes, because we have really, really poor outcomes in places that have been left behind. And some of our forested areas are, you know, home to communities that definitely fit that description.
Oh, that's sad. Look, just to wind up, if that ETS does stay, it looks like it will, what needs to change in it? Are there settings in it? Have you done much thinking about how it needs to be changed to put an end to this problem?
Well, at the moment, it's not really enabling what current land users would hope to do with their land, right? So a lot of the classifications that, like, it's designed for big chunky applications of wide scale planting. It's uneconomic to use it below a certain level. You actually need, you know, you need to go and get a consultant to even enter your parcels of land that have got trees on, etc. So yeah. I think we need a more local approach which appreciates that from region to region, there is going to be places you can put trees. But having a massive driver that really is designed more for a corporate mindset than a local and community mindset simply means that you're going to have it abused. And I think we've seen that, and we know that the people in charge already know that. What they lack is the appetite to craft something that is actually fit for purpose. I think most people would say, hey, New Zealand could plant more trees. What most of us would also say is let's choose where we put them much more carefully based on what is good for our economy, what is good for our communities, not what's good for offsetting on behalf of giant companies and foreign entities.
Like IKEA.
Like IKEA.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you think they'd ever make the furniture out of those trees?
Oh, hell no. So they bought Hurua Station. There's not even a bridge into there anymore. It's there's no way in hell. The foresters that are up there at the moment are trying as hard as they can to essentially rationalize their forestry interests because of how challenging that terrain is to work in, much less the roads all the way back to town. So smoke and mirrors, that's all I've got to say about that one.
Okay, Kerry Worsnop, that was a really interesting chat. Thanks for coming on to RCR, farmer, former Gisborne District Councillor, and obviously a vocal rural advocate. Big issues here, right? Big issues.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.